Greetings and welcome to Mind Matters News. We recently had a chat with Hal Philip, inventor of the modern touchscreen, about his groundbreaking technology. After selling his company, Hal turned his focus to personal health, particularly nutrition. In this episode of Mind Matters News, he shares his unique philosophy on wellness. While his views are his own and not necessarily endorsed by the Bradley Center at Discovery Institute, they are thought-provoking and intriguing, and we hope you enjoy listening. Now, here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings and welcome to Mind Matters News. I'm your not in shape host, Robert J. Marks. We're talking to Hal Philip today. You've heard his podcast about the great inventions that he's done. He was the inventor of the automatic faucet. He was the inventor of the automatic door opener, at least the one that works, and was the inventor of the modern touchscreen, which everybody uses every day. Since Hal has sold his company, he has been involved in other things, and everybody has to have a goal in life. Prior to the sale of his company, Quantum Research, his goal was to develop the technology, to license, and to do great and wonderful things. But after that, he has a new goal, right? Everybody has to have a goal.
Sure, everybody has to have a goal.
Everybody has to have a goal. You know, I think it was W.C. Fields that says, everybody must believe in something. I believe I'll have another drink.
I'll have a drink to that.
I'll have a drink, yeah. So, this is not drinking, but it is a goal. What's your goal?
Well, my goal is longevity and living a healthy lifestyle so I don't get diseases and don't have to take pharmaceutical products.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because I have two small children and I want to see them grow up. They're ages 2 and 6, and I want to see grandkids, and I'm already 71, so that's a very tall order. I have a little bit of an advantage, maybe genetically, because my mother lived to 99, but she had dementia at the end. So my goal would be to live to at least 100, but not suffer those kind of mental consequences.
I tell you, yeah, living to an old age is rough. I have some friends that have onset dementia. They don't have long in this earth to live, but their quality of life is just terrible.
That's right.
So it's important to maintain the quality of life.
Quality of life is very important.
So one of the things that you've done, and we're going to talk today about diet and health concerns, mm-hmm. which has nothing to do with the technological advances and the invention that Hal has done. And we have to offer the disclaimer. You should probably check with your healthcare provider or some other person of authority before you take any of this advice to heart, but we're going to hear some of Hal's personal journey into figuring out some of this stuff. It is very coherent with Robert F. Kennedy's situation of MAHA, Making America Healthy Again. And I don't know, the claims that Kennedy make are just astonishing. He claimed that during his uncle John F. Kennedy's presidency, only 2 to 6% of American children had chronic health conditions, compared to 60 to 66% today.
That sounds about right.
He said that there has been a dramatic rise in autism rates, stating that in the 1960s the rate was 1 in 10,000. Today it is 1 in 31 or 1 in 34 children. Describing it as an epidemic. Kennedy has claimed that over 70% of adults and 1/3 of children are overweight or obese, and diabetes prevalence is 10 times higher than in the 1960s. He says that, the CDC confirms. It says CDC data confirms high obesity rates, about 73% of adults and 35% of children aged 2 to 19 are overweight or obese. These are astonishing claims. Another one says that another claim that Kennedy has made is that 90% of U.S. healthcare spending is devoted to chronic diseases, which he claims impose a 20% tax on the economy. And so all of these are incredible claims, and a lot of them are due to diet, and I think that Hal agrees with most of these. Is that right?
Yeah, I've had my own personal journey, and I absolutely agree with that based on my own personal experience.
And I can tell you that Hal is 71, and this is great. I used to be 71, and he's looking healthy. He's slimmed down. He used to weigh over 200 pounds. I think it was 210. Now he's down to 165. He looks healthy, and he's very careful about what he eats and his lifestyle. And I tell you, it's something which is compelling. So Hal, tell us a little bit about your philosophy of food. I know that Hal is visiting us right now, and I know that he has a lot of limitations of the food that he'll eat. So tell us about your philosophy, for example, of eating food.
So, well, first of all, my philosophy on eating food came from eating wrong and then becoming very sick and overweight and pre-diabetic, and then having almost a religious conversion to eating right. And this happened within the course of one day when I discovered that someone in my family had diabetes and had been eating the same way that I had been. This particular person is older. And I decided that that was not the course of life that I wanted to follow. So I changed my eating patterns almost overnight. And I did this by throwing out all the food that I had in the kitchen and the pantry, virtually everything, because it was all the wrong kind of food. It was laden with the wrong fats, carbohydrates, sugars. They were processed foods and so on, cereals, all these kind of foods, breads. I threw them out and went back to the grocery store and bought new with fresh eyes. And this really changed my life dramatically, almost overnight. And I lost the weight. And the principles are very simple. And I think most people inherently know some of these principles, but effectuating and reacting on these principles is sometimes difficult. But basically eating clean, whole, natural foods, avoiding processed foods, ultra-processed foods in particular, junk food in particular, avoid those. Avoid the wrong kinds of fats, which means seed oils. Seed oils are truly evil. They were brought in because we were taught back in the late 70s and 80s that natural fats were bad for us. We should avoid butter. It was going to give us heart attacks. Natural fat like lard was going to give us heart attacks.
I'm old enough to remember that margarine was the big thing. And
yes.
Pushing margarine.
Margarine was healthy. And
big
butter was bad.
Yes.
Butter bad, margarine healthy.
That. Yes.
And these are all based on ultra-processed principles of extracting oils from seeds that human beings never naturally ate. You know, historically, we never ate these things. They're unsuited. They have the wrong molecular structure. They cause inflammation in the human body. They oxidize very rapidly. And this is what was kind of foisted upon us. We were guilt-shamed into consuming these foods. And then processed foods came along, which incorporated these things. Even French fries. McDonald's in the early 90s, up to the early 90s, was frying French fries in lard, which is a perfectly natural, healthy fat. And they switched from lard into seed oils, like canola oil or peanut oil or whatever they're using to fry their fries. And these oils, these kind of seed oils are heavily oxidized very quickly in the fryer, and they're reused, and they're very evil for our body. They're very toxic.
And if you
build up in our tissues.
And if you've ever watched the movie about the founding of McDonald's and Ray Kroc, he decided that they didn't want to put milkshakes anymore, so they got this mixture,
and
they mixed it up, and they couldn't call it milkshakes anymore because it didn't have milk in it, so they called it shakes. And I don't know if they've gone back to milkshakes or not, but
no idea. I don't eat at McDonald's, so I wouldn't even. I wouldn't know. No, I would never eat there in a million years.
Okay, so they went to this. Why did they go to this? It was just cheaper.
Number one, the U.S. government was telling everybody that the old fats were bad and that these seed oil fats were good for you. So there was a lot of public pressure from health agencies and so on to make this kind of change. And they realized that the flavor of the fries was going to be a little bit different, but not different enough that people would object. And it was cheaper. Of course, it was much cheaper.
Uh-huh.
But these oils are ultra-processed. They're refined in factories that look like petroleum refineries.
Are you serious?
Were totally
they do the
serious.
Separation?
Yeah.
Really?
They have to bleach these things. They have to deodorize these things. They have to decolor it. There's quite a few chemical steps, including the use of hexane as an extractant solvent. And so there's always some residue hexane in these oils. It's really a very heavy refining process. And the result is a very fragile molecule that's very easy to denature, to break, and to oxidize. And these get into our tissues and continue to oxidize and break.
So that was my next question. Why is this bad? It looks like maybe they could do some chemical variations on this. But so what?
Sure.
Is it bad?
So from first principles, we should be consuming those kind of foods and substances which our bodies are genetically adapted to eating.
Okay.
Historically. You know. So these kind of oils are all new. They're within the past 120 years or so. So we never adapted to these oils. Our biome, the gut biome, our tissues don't really know what to do with these things. So they incorporate it as best as possible. But in general, these create inflammation over a long period of time. You can consume them short run and not feel any ill effects. But if you consume these things over a long period of time, you will get sick, you will get diabetes, you will get other diseases. Even arthritis and wrinkling of skin and all kinds of problems result from these kind of oils. But we dissociate the effects with the cause because the time delay is so large. It takes years for the buildup of these oils to cause these kind of problems. But the end result is we're sick. And children become obese. Adults get diabetes much earlier than actually get diabetes at all, which they didn't used to get.
How does this food cause this?
Well, I'm not a biochemist, so okay. There are a lot of papers on this now, and there's a lot of research that discusses the reasons why. But it has to do with inflammatory processes, is my understanding. But my point is that I cut these things out almost overnight, along with all the sugars and the carbohydrates. I basically went on the Atkins diet.
Okay.
So the Atkins diet is high protein, high fat, some vegetables, but basically you cut out all the sugars and go into what's known as ketosis. So you're burning ketone bodies instead of sugars in your system. There's always some sugar, some glucose in your system. Your liver makes it and converts it out of protein. Your brain needs glucose, but the overwhelming majority of glucose in the human body today is caused by foods. It's induced by foods that we eat. And by the way, all starches generate glucose spikes because potatoes, rice, pasta, all these things break down in the body, in the stomach rather, and convert into sugar molecules almost immediately. So if you get a blood glucose monitor, a patch on your arm that monitors your real-time glucose levels in your blood, and you eat a bagel or you eat a potato or you eat some rice, you will see that within a half an hour you'll get a glucose spike in your blood. We don't think it's sugar, but these things are sugar, actually. They're just chains of sugar molecules attached together, and we call that starches. Carbohydrates, starches, whatever you want to say, but it's a kind of starch. And these things are sliced up into individual glucose molecules in the stomach and intestine. And that's where you get the damage from in the system. These glucose spikes in the blood damage your tissues. They cause an overproduction of insulin. It stresses your pancreas. And eventually your pancreas burns out.
Okay.
You know, it's just overstressing the components. It's like trying to take a standard Chevy car or something and with a standard transmission and engine and everything else and going drag racing with it all the time.
I see.
It's going to wear it out pretty damn quick. It's just not going to last, right?
Or maybe trying to fuel it with vegetable oil.
There you go. So anyway, what I did was I cut out all these kind of bad foods, the unnatural foods, and even bread. And bread has been historically eaten since the Mesopotamians. So, you know, the growing of wheat products and so on is now a pretty ancient affair. But the fact is that we never really adapted to these products. The archaeologists will tell you that if you go back pre-Mesopotamia, the skeletons that they unearth, the fossils, the human remains, have perfect teeth. Teeth started to deteriorate with the advent of modern farming and agriculture.
How far back do you have to go?
That's like 6,000 years.
6,000
years.
So the teeth were good, huh?
The teeth were good, yeah, because they weren't using grains in their food as a food source. The hunter-gatherer societies typically don't have any decay problems in their teeth. So that's a telling thing.
Uh-huh.
Those substances, these carbohydrates and so on from grains, cause other damage in our bodies, not just that. But we now know that, for example, tooth decay, gum disease, these things also trigger heart disease. Not many people know that. But
that really surprised me, that if you have bad teeth, it can really affect your
absolutely,
heart health.
Absolutely.
I don't understand the cause, but I've heard the relationship.
Well, my understanding is it causes inflammation in the gums. And this inflammation, the bacteria and the bacterial toxins, because they produce toxins as a byproduct from their metabolism, the acids and so on, and end up etching the teeth, which is why you get tooth decay. These things leak into the bloodstream, and they go back into circulation, and they affect the heart most of all, and the coronary arteries. So this is all very, very bad, and it's caused by, I wouldn't say modern practices, but practices that go back to the dawn of agriculture. And agriculture in many ways was obviously a good thing. It allowed for human populations to expand. We had suddenly a very high energy, high calorie food source that could be cultivated and made more reliable at scale than hunter-gatherers could get. But the downside of it was health problems. It's always been health problems. And that hasn't changed in 5,000 years.
So RFK's stuff is in the 1960s up to today. what do we do different? What has happened to change things from the 1960s?
Seed oils.
Now we're 65 years after the 1960s.
Seed oils.
You think
the demonization of cholesterol and natural fats?
Okay.
That happened starting in the 1950s, actually. So
wait, let's talk about that. The demonization of cholesterol.
Yeah.
And that's bad because cholesterol is supposed to increase the or decrease your blood flow by accumulating on the walls of your arteries and veins.
There's so many myths surrounding this topic.
Oh, you know,
the
really
research
think
that I've done.
Bad science?
Yeah, it's very bad science.
Okay.
So this myth started around the Ansel Keys study from the 1950s, where he correlated coronary heart disease with cholesterol based on the diets of different countries.
Okay.
And he compiled data from something like 20 countries. But what he did was a little bit fraudulent because he cut out the inconvenient data from the countries that he didn't like the data from.
Oh, geez.
So he only used the data that he thought was appropriate for the results. So he preformed the study to coincide with the results that he wanted, as opposed to doing real science. Unfortunately, this took hold and people believed this.
Yeah. He was probably a professor trying to get another paper.
Could be. Anyway, this formed public opinion and public health doctrine. In the 1970s, 1977, I guess it was Eugene McCarthy, I think, or I'm not sure who it was, but somebody in the U.S. Senate was looking at this, and they came out with recommendations on a health panel that people should eat less cholesterol and eat more plant food. Okay,
because there's cholesterol in
food. Eat less meats and plant and fats, okay. And more plant and other. So the problem with that is that you have an if you eat less fats, fats are very high calorie. So if you eat less fats, you got to eat something else to compensate. There's only one thing left. It's carbohydrates.
Okay.
And also, since cholesterol was demonized from that point forward, they had to find a substitute for cholesterol. So they started saying, cholesterol bad, use these vegetable oils. They're not even vegetable oils. They're seed oils. Let's get that straight. There's nothing to do with vegetables. These are healthy for you because they're not cholesterol. They don't contain the same fats as you do in lard. So these fats are now healthy, they said. But actually, it was all the wrong way around.
So here's what I'm hearing from you, that there is cholesterol in food. There's cholesterol in the veins. So therefore, the cholesterol in the veins must be from the cholesterol in the food. And this was kind of stated, I'm hearing you saying, without really any deeper study into the reason of the cholesterol in the veins.
Yeah. So actually, your liver makes cholesterol. You need cholesterol. If you didn't have cholesterol, you would die immediately.
Okay.
Vitamin D, for example, is made by the interaction of cholesterol in the skin with ultraviolet light from the sun. So are other hormones. It's not the only hormone. So you need vitamin D absolutely to live. Otherwise, you'll get serious diseases. And vitamin D regulates the immune system. It regulates the absorption of calcium into the bones. It does hundreds of different things in the body. And that's made from cholesterol. It's undeniable. So the war on sunshine was another problem, of course, because if you don't have sunshine, you don't make vitamin D.
Okay.
And then you get diseases from lack of vitamin D. If you don't have cholesterol, you don't get vitamin D. So this was a complete catastrophe as far as public policy was concerned. And this really started in the late 70s, early 80s. And this is exactly the point when obesity started to rise dramatically and all these other health problems in children and so on began to accelerate. People went to cereals for breakfast instead of eating eggs. Eggs were demonized because they have cholesterol.
I remember.
You know,
that.
All of these things were, butter was demonized. Instead, people were eating Kellogg's cereal. Okay, let's be fair. It was also General Mills and many other companies that made cereals. And these were actually quite evil because they were full of actual sugar plus the carbohydrate of the grains that they were made
and
from.
And it was a cereal company that popularized the term breakfast is the most important meal.
Yes, that was propaganda.
That was never from a doctor.
It was from a cereal company. You're
cereal
absolutely
company.
Correct.
Yeah.
It was all propaganda to sell cereal.
Okay.
But people took it as gospel and that as truth that this was the way to eat moving forward. And of course, they made these things as tasty and sugar laden as possible. So kids loved this stuff and became addicted to it. And then we wondered why they became fat and got diabetes at an early age.
Yeah.
So it was a perfect storm. And the medical industry didn't object, of course, because they make money on sick people. So why would they object?
That's an interesting thought that the medical field makes money on sick people, so therefore it's in their interest to keep people sick. That sounds like a very terrible morality.
But it doesn't even have to be said out loud. They can do these behaviors almost unconsciously. but they will go where the money is. It's in the interest of the shareholders to make profit. Okay. So why would they engage in a behavior that doesn't make profit? So even being silent is complicit if they know the truth, but they were silent. And by the way, many of the one of the points that Robert Kennedy makes is that the food companies, many of them were taken over by cigarette manufacturers. R.J. Reynolds and so on took over many of the food companies like Nabisco and so on. And the chemists, the scientists who were working for the tobacco companies ended up engineering the foods to make them very addictive.
That's really chilling. Mm-hmm. Another thing you told me is that in your diet, you ignore carbohydrates in the sense that that's not important to you. What's important is that there's zero or very small carbohydrates in the food that you consume.
Yeah, I'm a low-carb guy.
Yeah, and so this idea of counting calories, what's your thought on counting calories?
I don't count calories. I have not counted calories in as long as I can remember. It's pointless to count calories.
Okay, so therefore it's...
First of all, you can never get an accurate assessment of how many calories because you don't log everything that you eat. You don't know how many grams or pounds of something you've eaten in a week. There's no way to track this stuff. It's complete BS. So what you really need to do is just eat properly and then just, stop eating when you're full. Don't feel a compulsion to continue to eat.
Uh-huh.
I try to restrict my eating to within a narrow time window during the day so that the body has a chance to detox itself, to go into some kind of a stasis without having to spend energy digesting food and be able to purge itself of the waste products from the food from the day before. So I do intermittent fasting. I usually don't eat until well after 12 o'clock, so I skip breakfast. And I feel absolutely fine. I'm 71. I've got complete energy. I'm doing great. I don't take medications. So there's no problem. I get my blood tested every year, and it's fine. I don't have any metabolic diseases or cancer growing or anything, as far as the tests are concerned anyway. So, it seems to work. And I did this starting in 2005. When I found out about this person who ended up with metabolic problem, diabetes.
As a person you love, and that was really rough.
It was really rough, yeah. So this person was consuming large amounts of carbohydrate and ended up with diabetes and then proceeded to have cancer and high blood pressure and stents in the heart and detached retinas and all kinds of problems as a result of the diabetes. And I certainly didn't want to go down that same path. I decided then and there to go on the Atkins diet or the ultra low carbohydrate ketosis style diet. And as I said, I threw out all the food in the kitchen and the pantry and started over again.
Okay.
I completely changed my eating patterns overnight. And fortunately, my wife at the time was very sympathetic to this. And I think you need to be able to structure your food environment, the things that are around you, so that you're only eating the appropriate things. If you have the candy bars and the cereal around, you're going to end up eating it. You're going to have moments of uncontrol, and you're just going to go eat this stuff.
I tell you, it's probably like quitting smoking in a house full of smokers.
When you see the pack of cigarettes, you're going to reach for it.
The pack of cigarettes.
You can't see the pack of cigarettes. It can't be there. So fortunately, I had, my wife was very sympathetic, and she did exactly the same thing that I did. And I think that's essential.
Did she feel better also?
Yeah, she was never overweight and never had the metabolic problem. She didn't eat as much, and she got maybe more exercise than I did at the time. So, but she felt fine and felt great afterwards too during this shift. So
we've heard about big tobacco historically. It seems like Robert F. Kennedy and I think you are saying that we have big fast food.
Mm.
We have big pharma.
We have agriculture processors. Yeah.
Okay.
Cargill and these kind of companies that do the processing of the food and, the commodity trading and all the way from the farm to the table. And these companies in aggregate are responsible for what's in the grocery store and what's in the restaurants and the kind of things that are pushed on
us.
Okay, elaborate
on that.
Advertising.
I'm not familiar with that. They go to the farms. They get the grain. They get the
sure.
They want to
push the wheat. They're harvesting. The farmers are harvesting the wheat and selling it
because it's intermediaries. Cheap to grow, probably.
Yeah. So, they make money. Obviously, everybody's making money. It's the science of growing wheat and corn and these things is it's a science, right? So it's a fairly predictable process. And they want to sell lots of it. In fact, there's so much corn that they convert it into ethanol for cars.
Yes, of course.
They're growing extra just to convert. So it's not even being used for food. There's so much of this stuff. they have to find other outlets for it. So one easy way to get rid of this stuff is first of all, you can feed it to the animals, like the cows and the pigs and so on, so as a food source for them, and you feed it to people. You know, you convert it into products like breakfast cereals, snack bars, Doritos chips, all the kind of junk food that we associate with modern life. These are converted from these grain products.
Uh-huh.
And then you process them with seed oils, ultra-refined seed oils, and you have a perfect toxic product. There's a book that came out last year called Ultra Processed People, and I really recommend
Ultra Processed People.
Okay. I'm blanking on the name of the author, but I recommend that people pick up this book and read it. In this book, it's really described what's really going on with these ultra processed foods and, you know, the history behind them and so on. But one of the fascinating things I learned about this book is why ultra processed foods are really so, one of the reasons they're really so toxic. It turns out that if you took, take as an example, you took a sandwich, okay, or you took a, you know, grandma's home cooked meal, you know, some meat and potatoes and some vegetables, and you consume that, right? So you get a certain response from your body from that meal, just a traditional meal, nothing special. If you desiccate that, you dry it out, and you convert all of that into a powder, and then you reconstitute it into a bar or a chip, chemically, it's the same thing. You haven't done anything to it, right?
Okay.
It's the same grandma's home-cooked meal.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's all the same. All you did is take the water out, you ground it up into a powder, and then you compressed it into a cake or a flat object like a Dorito chip or something, right? And now you eat that. Why is that going to kill you, whereas grandma's home meal won't?
Okay.
One will kill you.
I would flunk
it. It'll take a while, but it'll kill you.
I would flunk this quiz. Go ahead and give me the answer.
It's because the processed form is pre-digested. When it hits your stomach, it dissociates into individual tiny, tiny little particles of food almost immediately. In fact, if you eat a potato chip or a Dorito chip, it's very crunchy in your mouth, but by the time it gets to the back of your mouth, it's a slurry.
Yeah, it's delicious though, Hal.
I know. The chemical engineers who did, they are chemical engineers.
Yeah.
They hack your taste buds, so they know what to do. There's been a lot of research put into making things very, very tasty. The problem is it hits your stomach as a slurry. And this slurry is absorbed through your stomach walls and your intestine within seconds. It just hits your bloodstream like a sledgehammer. Whereas grandma's cooked meal takes maybe an hour, 2 hours to be absorbed.
Okay.
Because it's going down as whole chunks. And these chunks take time to dissolve and for enzymes and acids to work on them. Whereas a chip form or a bar form or whatever it's compressed into as from a powder, which is what these junk foods are really made of, these dissociate almost immediately when they hit your stomach. And then you get a huge glucose spike in your blood. And then you burn out your endocrine system. You end up with diabetes. Endocrine system.
I don't know what that
is. Well, endocrine is all the hormones that are flowing through your body. And for example, insulin is an endocrine.
Okay.
So it's a compound, a signaling compound made by an organ of your body that signals other parts of your body to do certain things, in this case, to absorb glucose. So it's burning out that system, in this case, the insulin system. It's overloading it. And this is how you get inflammation in your arteries. And this is where the inflammation, it doesn't come from the cholesterol. Cholesterol is the response to inflammation. It doesn't cause the inflammation. Cholesterol is the cure for the inflammation.
The cholesterol kind of covers up the
Bandage. Wound. It's a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your body's trying to cure the problem that was caused by the inflammation.
Wow.
So all these things are things that I learned over the course of the past 20 years, and I've adapted my diet accordingly. Well, I adapted really almost in one hit. But some other things, like knowing about how ultra-processed food really hits you, I only learned just last year. I mean, this idea that these processed foods are dissociated into tiny particles and then they're absorbed very rapidly, that's new knowledge for me. I didn't know that. And almost any food will do that to you, that you convert in that way. So protein bars are bad for that reason. And all these things are bad for, that are highly processed, are bad for not just the chemical content, which they have. They have lots of other things inside the actual food.
I eat a proton.
And the sugar.
I eat a proton bar.
That's a very energetic source of calories.
My protein bar has lots of protons in it.
There you go.
But I eat that, and I'm going to have to look at it. So what?
It's full of sugar, by the way.
Well,
protein bars are full of honey. It's in other forms, right? Yeah.
Okay.
This is how they hack the ingredients label.
Yeah.
They have different kinds of sugars. They're all still sugar, but they call them different names.
Yeah.
And so you have no idea looking at the ingredients list unless you're a chemist what the hell they put in
you
there.
You and I were looking at a list today, and it had the second ingredient
maltodextrin.
So they hide it.
Yeah, as a different chemical name.
It
is a different chemical, but they use that chemical instead of saying it's just actually a form of
sugar.
But
it's still sugar.
It's still sugar.
So do you think there's the idea that this big food is kind of like big tobacco in pushing their products on people that they know is unhealthy for them?
Yeah. Well, my theory is that a lot of this goes back to companies like BlackRock, you know, that invest in these companies. So BlackRock and State Street and other companies that are hedge fund managers and so on. These companies have enormous blocks of shares. They control enormous blocks of shares of these kind of companies, both the food manufacturers, processors, as well as pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a holy trinity of evil because these...
A holy trinity of evil.
You've got the BlackRocks, and then you've got the food processors, and then you've got the medical community, the pharmaceutical community in particular.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're all acting in concert for the same net effect, which is to destroy your body and to maximize profit on your body. They don't actually want you dead because dead people don't make them any money. So they don't want you to die. They want you to live long. They really do. But they want you to be sick the whole way.
Well, that sounds like big pharma too, doesn't it?
Well, that's part of the triad of evil. Pharmaceuticals, yeah, medical manufacturers, whatever.
Medical.
The whole hospital system and the whole medical system you can consider, including pharmaceuticals.
Uh-huh.
They're part of the triad. They're part of the problem because they make money on sick people. And then the food manufacturers are creating the sick people. But the central control is the investors who are represented by the hedge fund managers and so on who invest in these companies.
They want the bucks.
Yeah, like BlackRock as an example.
Just like big tobacco. They were interested in their bottom line. They didn't care if they were killing people.
The legal requirement of these companies is to make profit for their shareholders.
Yeah.
Not to keep people healthy. That's not actually one of their objectives.
So what do you think of genetically modified food? I was talking to someone, in fact, he was a doctor, who said, my goodness, it used to be that wheat had this really skinny stalk, and if a windstorm came along, it would just knock it over. And so they did genetically modification so that the wheat now had a thick stalk and was unable to bend, or it was more difficult to bend it during a storm. The other thing which is interesting is you can't take seeds off of corn grown from modified corn to plant more corn. You can't use again.
But that's been true a long time.
Yeah, I know.
Not just with GMO.
Oh, is that right?
Hybrid plants cannot reproduce by seed. So most agricultural products are hybridized for years.
They're kind of like a mule?
Even maybe the last 100 years, you've had hybridized products.
Okay.
So like a mule, exactly like a mule. They cannot reproduce. You cannot take the seeds of corn and try to plant them and get more corn out of hybridized corn. But that's certainly true of GMO because GMO is all, by definition, all hybridized.
So I tell you a trick that I did. We have these plants at the brick at Baylor University. And I took some popcorn seeds from regular popcorn, not the microwave popcorn, but regular popcorn.
Yeah.
And I went and nobody was looking. So I stuck them in the soil. And then a few days later, they began to sprout. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I finally got a corn stalk, a little corn stalk, because I did it in my office too.
Hmm.
But no good corn. That was interesting. So the popcorn didn't grow.
Yeah, I'm not a biologist, but I think one of the things about hybridization is sometimes they will grow, but they won't reproduce.
Okay,
won't reproduce.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing they used to do in Texas, I haven't seen it recently, we have a lot of corn. You and I have been driving around and we see all these corn fields.
Sure.
Was after they harvest the corn, they leave this little sliver of corn up. And that, I believe, is for the insurance companies and the grain people to come in and make sure that this was the crop that came from their seeds.
Okay.
Which is very interesting. In other words, you can't use the other stuff.
What I want to say about agriculture is that this kind of hybridization process has been going on for hundreds of years.
Okay.
I've always been trying to reproduce the best vegetables, produce, corn, wheat, whatever.
So,
but this really accelerated in the 1960s with the Green Revolution. And okay. Wheat, for example, became short. The stalks became fatter. The heads of the seed heads became very thick and heavy with wheat seeds, and this was very profitable. And you get better, more robust crops. But what they didn't pay attention to was the nutritional profile of the resulting product.
Okay.
So it turns out that wheat now has more opium in it, or opioids, than it ever used to have. Wheat always had some opioids. They're very addictive. And the concentration of opioids increased dramatically through the Green Revolution process. The amount of other toxins that are produced in these also increased. So it generated really kind of a disaster for the agriculture industry in terms of nutrition. Nutrition was the last thing on the list of priorities. They wanted something that would grow to a very high yield, reproducibly from year to year, without regard to what it would do to people. That was not important. And that's true generally across agriculture. Apples are grown to be picked green, you know, and then maybe ripen later, or I don't know. Certainly many fruits are picked that way. Bananas are picked green. And transportation is an important subject as well, for example. So.
Oh, my goodness. So talk about Big Pharma for a while. You and I are on different medications, but you're, I think, on two, and I'm on three.
I'm on which one.
You're on one. Okay, one, yeah. You're on one. And I know a lot of people, they just take gobs of pills. It's like a meal to them almost.
Sure.
And
I take a lot of supplements, in fairness, but I don't take too many.
Tell me about the supplements that you take and why you take them. What do you think that does for your health?
So as you get old, your ability to absorb nutrients decreases. And, okay. And this is compounded by the fact that the nutritional content of foods has declined dramatically, even in the supposedly healthy foods. So if you look at, for example, broccoli or healthy vegetables, carrots and so on, they're grown generally in nutrient-poor soils because the soils are depleted from over-farming. Uh-oh. And it's never imagined in agriculture that you would add back things like boron and manganese and copper and things like that to the soil. Also, the use of heavy amounts of chemical pesticides and so on affects the nutrient content of the plants. A lot of the nutrient absorption comes from the mycelium, the fungus in the soil, which converts the minerals into an organic form that the plants can absorb. And if you put pesticides on the soil, herbicides on the soil, you kill off a lot of these beneficial fungi that help assist the plant to absorb nutrients. Hydroponics is another example. So in Europe, you get a lot of hydroponically produced produce out of
edibles. Explain hydroponics.
The plants are grown in water solution. So they're grown inside warehouses. The advantage of that is you don't have to use pesticides because there's nothing. It's a sterile environment. There's a giant tent over it.
Must be pretty expensive food, though, too, right?
No, they've really got it down to a science.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we find a lot of it in the grocery stores in Switzerland. It comes from Holland and other similar. Even Switzerland produces this.
By the way, just as background, Hal lives outside of Zurich, right?
Yes.
Okay, so.
So, but my point is that these things are generally nutrient deficient, and what the body does is it tries to compensate by eating more of it to get the nutrients that it needs. And then you just get the empty calories. And then you get fat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a problem. So as you get old, you have nutrient-deficient food increasingly, because that's just the way agriculture has gone for the past century or two. And then the human body, when you get old, doesn't absorb nutrients as well. So you need more of whatever it is that you need to compensate, B vitamins or vitamins generally, you know. You just need more because the body can't utilize what it gets. So I take a lot of supplements. I'm sure more than I should. If I have excess, it's going to be eliminated by the body. I get blood tests every year to make sure I'm not overdosing myself. That's an important part of what I do.
A lot of the vitamins are water soluble. I think it's the fat soluble ones you have to watch out for, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think vitamin A is one.
Vitamin A is definitely one you have to be careful with.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But D and C and some of those others are...
Well, C is water soluble. D is fat soluble. And then
oh, is that right? I didn't know.
Yeah.
That.
And then there's CoQ10. Which is a mitochondrial food, effectively, and that's something that everybody over maybe age of 50 should consider.
Explain CoQ10. My healthcare provider has me to take that. And what does it stand for and what does it do?
Coenzyme Q10.
Okay.
So it's involved in the production of ATP in the mitochondria. And ATP? I'm not a biochemist.
Okay.
Adenosine triphosphate. It's the principal molecule used for conveying energy from the mitochondria. We all know mitochondria are the powerhouses of the cell, if we remember that from high school biology.
Okay.
And they're a cell within the cell. So all of our cells, except for red blood cells, have mitochondria in them. And they provide energy for the cell. Without mitochondria, you couldn't contract your muscles, for example. Your brain wouldn't function. Your heart wouldn't function. And mitochondria were absorbed in early evolution, if you believe in evolution, into cells as symbiosis. It's a symbiotic thing. It's not really a part of our human body, but it is a part of our human body. Every cell has it except, as I said, red blood cells. But these provide the power source. And they actually, in the mitochondria, they actually have a tiny nanomotor that's spinning at something like 50,000 RPM.
Oh,
if I recall correctly. I don't remember the exact RPM, but
it's actually like spinning. Is that like a flagellum?
It's a little rotor. It's like a little motor, literally, on an axis.
Okay.
And that
evolved.
And it's generating electrons that provide the energy source for the
cell. Wait, this little motor is running around generating electrons?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's an actual motor.
Okay.
Yeah, it's wild. It's totally wild.
For producing. I'm familiar with Michael Behe and is talking about the flagellum and how it looks like an outboard motor. It sounds like this is one of those engines.
It's an engine. It's a mechanical engine.
Uh-huh. Wow.
It's totally wild. So you have to feed all these processes with the right kind of nutrients and enzymes and supplements and so on, minerals. Otherwise, they don't work properly. So CoQ10 is one of those. But there are many others, you know, so you need, again, the right kind of selenium and other minerals to allow this process.
You keep throwing out these words, Hal. What is miscellaneum?
Selenium, yeah. Selenium is an element. It's found in soil.
Okay.
It's one of those elements that are depleted by over-farming.
Okay.
Depends on the soil condition to begin with, but yeah, that's the basic idea. So I take a lot of these minerals. I take a lot of vitamins. I take CoQ10. I take a lot of B vitamins in particular. NAD has gotten a good reputation for mitochondrial support, nicotinamide, adenoside, something. Okay. So,
I don't know. You might be a biochemist.
I am not. Okay. I deny all knowledge.
Okay.
So I am not. And if I made some error in something I said, my apology to the listeners, but that's the general idea.
Tell me about the role of exercise. You know, it used to be before our sedentary society that everybody got exercise. I think it was Rush Limbaugh that said, "I work my ass off sitting on it." I think that most of the United States, in terms of the office workers, do that. They sit. They're sedentary. That's certainly true with a lot of youth. I think I have some grandchildren that are kind of like that are very sedentary and they don't get the exercise they want. But you put exercise as part of your regimen, is that right?
Yes. In fact, in 2005, when I changed my diet dramatically, once I lost enough weight, I started running.
Okay.
And I got up to 10 kilometers twice a week. And that really helped revolutionize my body totally.
Okay.
Gave me energy. And I continue to do that on a lesser basis now, so I really need to get back into it again, but I've had some personal issues over the past year or so.
Well, you know, the thing is that, I don't know about you, but as you age, your knees start to go, and it makes jogging and running a little bit more difficult.
But a lot of that's just from weight.
Ah, okay.
So I started running before I lost all the weight, and I nearly destroyed my knees.
I see.
And I had to wait until I had lost most of my weight.
Okay.
So I just waited until the right time, and then I started slowly getting into jogging and worked my way up. And my knees are absolutely fine. If I don't run, if I don't get exercise, after some weeks, months, my knees will start to hurt.
Okay.
So it's important to keep it up.
It's the muscles.
Yeah, you have to make yourself, as Nisim Taleb would say, anti-fragile.
Anti-fragile.
Yeah, anti-fragile. You have to make yourself anti-fragile so that you're robust into your old age. So you have a reserve of tissues, of muscles, of bone.
Yeah.
And your ability to be coordinated when you walk so you don't lose balance and so on. This is really important. The number one of the number one ways that people die in old age is they fall. They break bones and they can't recover in time. and they lose their mobility, and they become depressed, and
after they break a chair because they think that their life is worthless. I've actually heard, I want your reaction to this, that as you age, if you don't watch your intake, that sometimes you don't fall and break your hip, that you break your hip and fall.
Yeah, sure.
Have you ever heard of that?
It's osteoporosis.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, sure. Your bones become super brittle.
Okay.
And a lot of this is, there are several reasons for this, from what I read in the literature and from experts. Number one, lack of enough vitamin D, lack of enough vitamin K2, in particular a form of K2 called MK7. Vitamin D is from sunlight, and we're all told not to get into the sun and not to, get so much sun exposure. So this is very bad advice, because this will lower your vitamin D levels, and this is necessary for the absorption of calcium into the bone. To assist the calcium going into the bone, you need vitamin K2, as I said, form MK7. You need to take care of this stuff. You need enough cholesterol as well in order to create the vitamin D out of the UV light from the sun.
Uh-huh.
You need the right kind of diet, and you need exercise. And without the exercise, your bone won't develop either. When astronauts go into space, they lose bone mass right away because their bones are not under stress.
Yes.
So the calcium leaches out of the bone. And I don't know exactly the process of where that calcium all goes, but it's coming out of the bone.
Well, I heard
the bone becomes weak.
The astronauts that were stranded in space for a number of months, I guess, that Elon Musk finally bought home. They couldn't walk when they got back.
Yeah.
Because their bones
muscle mass is gone. Muscle mass is gone.
It's a muscle mass.
It's mostly that's muscle mass. Okay. But they become very fragile. So becoming anti-fragile is the goal. And that means building up your bone density, building up your muscle mass. That means weight training. It means aerobic exercise. It means getting the right nutrients and vitamins and so on to build up your body so that it's strong and can resist. And these things are also good for your immune system too. And that fights cancer. It turns out that the best way to fight cancer is to build up your immune system. Your immune system normally takes care of cancer.
I hear,
but they never talk about that.
We're fighting cancer all the time.
Yeah, our bodies constantly fight cancer. Our immune system is constantly sorting out these cancer cells. And killing them. But if your immune system decays because you're not getting the right nutrition or exercise, you're not in the right kind of frame of mind, in other words, a little bit depressed, your immune system stops working properly. And then you die of these things, not just cancers, but other things too.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, one of the things that you emphasize is trying to minimize the stress in your life too.
Sure.
That's going to have a terrible effect on your health.
Absolutely.
Could you unpack that, what you think about that a little bit?
Stress elevates cortisol and other hormones in your body, and it affects your immunity again. And stress will kill you eventually, yeah. Stressed people are usually short-lived people.
Okay.
That's just a biological fact. So there's a cascade of events from stress.
How do you get rid of stress?
You.
How do you get rid of stress in your life? Other than getting away from
not well
people.
Enough, not well enough.
Okay.
That's a fact. I have way too much stress. It was much worse maybe a few months ago even.
Okay,
because of some personal things that happened in my life. But getting sleep is really super super important. And again, that's an area where I'm a little bit lacking. I'm trying to solve that problem.
Okay, why do you have problems sleeping? You just don't sleep long enough, or what?
Well, I have custody of two small children half the time, and so they're in the bed with me. They're very small.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so there's that issue. As they get older, that'll become less of an issue.
Yeah.
But, so also just getting older, people sleep less. That's just a fact, So, and that's another reason why your body's repair mechanism stop working is you're not getting enough sleep. Just with age, you just don't get enough sleep.
How do you explain? One of the guys that came to your seminar today was Keith Schubert.
Yeah.
And he sleeps like 3-4 hours a night, and he just doesn't need it. And you hear other people like this, like Donald Trump and things like that.
Sure.
And I guess everybody needs a different type of sleep, a different amount of sleep.
Maybe they sleep much deeper than other people during the sleep. I don't sleep that deep. I've had the Apple Watch on, and it supposedly monitors sleep patterns and so on. Yeah, I don't get enough deep sleep. That's clear.
It seems to be that if you could increase the depth of your sleep, that would be really good.
Yes.
So maybe we need Big Pharma to make a pill for that. What do you think?
No. No.
Okay.
No, these pharmaceutical products always have side effects, you know.
Yeah.
It's far, far better to stick with natural substances that our bodies already use in one shape or another. If we're deficient, just boost it. It's, you know, there's a ton of supplements out there that do these things. And many of these things I've tried have worked for me in various varying degrees. So I'm sleeping much better because of them. But these are not drugs. These are just, like, melatonin is one. But there are a number of things that I take that help.
You know, one of the things that you and I talked about is visiting saunas.
Yeah.
And if you Google the benefits of sauna or ask Grok or ChatGPT, they list incredible attributes of sitting in a sauna and just sweating.
Yeah.
For me, it just knocks me out. I think maybe I sit in there for too long. But you've sat in saunas. What
I do 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
I do 20 minutes, yeah.
Okay. Do you get to the point where you can't stand it anymore, or you just look at your watch?
Sometimes, but I go to the sauna that's in the gym that I go to, and yeah. I can't tell you exactly. There's no thermometer in there. I have no idea. Sometimes it just seems hotter than other times.
Okay.
And so at those times, I seem to be able to last not quite as long. So, but I shoot for 20 minutes. Most times I achieve 20 minutes.
Wow.
But saunas are really good for you, and I don't get enough of them. You should be doing it 2-3 times a week.
So do you believe in the dry saunas or the hot? I don't know what they call the
just
hot
sauna. Just saunas. I don't know what humidity levels are typically in those. I don't do a steam bath, so.
Okay. Well, the one that I go to is they have one which is very high in humidity.
Sure.
And the other one is dry.
Yeah. Well, that's the other factor, because the high humidity ones feel hotter. They just feel hotter.
Gotcha.
And maybe that's the difference. And sometimes when I can't stay in there as long as maybe there's too much water added on the rocks before I got there, you know, so.
And then the cold dip afterwards or the cold shower.
Yes.
Do you do that?
Yeah, I do. Okay. My particular sauna has a large bucket outside that's hanging from suspended from the ceiling and a rope. It's full of cold water. And you just dump the bucket over this rope. You pull on the rope. It's like pulling on a church bell, and you pull on this rope and the bucket of water comes down on you. It's great.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It's so great. Totally cool.
How many buckets do you go through?
Two.
In one of those? Two buckets.
Yeah, okay. I do the first one, then wait a while until it refills. And then.
Hal Phillip is a two bucket man.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's funny. So, Hal Phillip, let me you summarize, and I think we should concentrate on diet and other things. Your philosophy of eating and taking care of yourself. We've gotten through the exercise. We understand the sleep. We understand the idea of reducing stress. But the thing which is really remarkable about you is your diet and the way that you make yourself eat the way that you eat. It's not easy to do that.
No, it's not.
I'll
admit it's very tough. But once you really get into it and you've done it for a few months, it becomes pretty easy.
Yeah.
It's not hard. That doesn't mean I don't eat the occasional ice cream or, you know, even a sandwich once in a while. But to do it on a daily basis, that's something I don't do. I really do cut out 99% of the old foods. And ultra-processed foods, never. I just don't eat Doritos and things like that. I just don't. I don't come near them.
How about Velveeta?
You know, that's cheese. And it's actually not that bad.
It's not that bad.
It's not that bad. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I have to look at the ingredients list again to see what else is in there, because I haven't eaten in a long time. But it's more or less a liquefied cheese. Yeah, it is kind of a processed or even ultra-processed food.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't have very much sugar, if any, in it. I don't think they add sugar into Velveeta.
Okay, give a short list of the food that you do eat.
Oh, I eat meat. I love beef. So I love beef. A good steak. Yeah. I will eat broccoli and cauliflower, for example, Brussels sprouts as side vegetables. Salads, definitely. Salads are good for nitric oxide production, which is important for vascular health. So salads are good. I don't ever use commercial dressings of any kind. I don't typically eat in restaurants because I don't trust what they're doing in the kitchen. So I think that's important.
We went to a restaurant yesterday and they served some bread and butter.
Yeah.
And Hal looked at it and he said, "That's not butter." We asked the waitress and she said, "Yeah, that's butter."
Mm-hmm.
And we said, "No, it doesn't look like butter. So she went and got the manager, and the manager came and said, no, that's it's not butter. it was a mixture, I think, of butter and seed oil or something.
Yeah, right? it was a seed oil butter blend is what he said.
Yeah, and we sat there and we watched it for a while, and it began to separate.
He did. It separated into the liquid, and it was really pretty funny just to see it on the table.
That was really spooky. So
it was very low grade, whatever it was.
You're not the only one that subscribes to this. Jordan Peterson, I don't know if you've followed him.
I do, yeah.
But he has gone on a all carnivorous diet.
He did.
We have a friend in Corpus that went on this. He introduces himself as a carnivore because that's just about all he eats. And their health has been incredible.
It is
so
true.
I don't know about the universality of the diet in terms of its benefits, but you know, these individual anecdotes really accumulate into strong evidence that this is a good way to go.
I think so. So there are many different labels for these kind of diets. I mean, there is the Atkins diet or the keto diet.
Right.
There are Mediterranean diets, which do incorporate more carbohydrates in them, but they're generally at least not quite as toxic as Western food. There's certainly the paleo diet, which tries to get back to ancestral diets. And that will
What do you think of the paleo diet?
I think it's actually okay.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. And in fact, I would say that maybe what I'm eating is more resembling the paleo diet. Than
paleo is eating things that people historically ate. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, but hunter-gatherer type foods. So this is pre-agriculture foods. So there might be some nuts and seeds in there, not seed extracts like seed oil, but nuts and seeds, maybe some fruits, berries, that sort of thing, and meat. So hunter-gatherers would hunt for meat, and that's what they would eat. Also, in the paleo times, of course, they ate the whole animal, and we don't do that anymore. So they would eat the heart, the liver, and the kidney and everything because they were hungry.
No, we get that in hot dogs.
You get that in hot dogs, that's right. And I was going to say, that's a source of those things, is sausage.
Okay. So hot dogs. By the way, I just got to admit, before we sat down and recorded this this interview, Hal and I shared a hot dog. We didn't share a hot dog. We each had a hot dog each. And that's okay. You think hot dogs are okay?
It's a little questionable.
They're on the borderline.
Because they add a lot of chemicals, nitrites and things like that, preservatives and things in there. And sometimes they add some grain products as filler, you know. So they're a little bit suspect, but it's not the worst food in the world. It's better than eating a sandwich, by far.
It is. Okay, well, that's great. So any last words? Any advice to people?
Yeah, I mean, just think in terms of what people used to eat historically before the advent of agriculture. Those are the foods that were adapted to eat. Those are the healthiest foods. Everything else that came after that with the dawn of agriculture is suspect. And I would say don't believe anything the medical profession tells you, even your personal doctor. Don't believe them. Just don't believe them.
Wow.
Okay. I don't believe anything any of my doctors tell me. I always do my own research. I don't believe a word of what they say. They're all corrupted.
So where do you go for authentication if you don't go to the medical doctor?
You know, it's actually pretty easy nowadays. You can go on YouTube and you can find lots of people with PhDs that go through these things that I'm talking about.
You don't
have to read PubMed scientific documents to figure this out. There are a large number of YouTube channels that talk about all of these things, and they work.
How do you know that isn't fake news, though?
No, these are actual researchers. There's actually a little cadre or community of these guys, and they even talk to each other, they even interview each other. They talk about the latest research. They will go over all the papers and analyze to a fine detail what's good about this paper, what the conflicts of interest on that paper were, you know, who the researchers were and what their agendas might have been. And what the data actually says, what is the statistical significance of the data. You will find that on YouTube. You won't find it anywhere else. So they pick apart these papers. They won't just read the abstract and give you the bullshit headlines of what the paper might say. They'll actually dig down into the actual data and analyze that and present that to you in layman's terms. And those are very powerful channels. There are quite a number of channels that do that now.
Okay.
On YouTube for free.
So what query would you put into a YouTube search to get this?
Oh, you can just do any of the topics on foods, for example, especially about, for example, carnivore diet. You'll come up with a bunch of channels immediately. And yeah, you have to separate the wheat from the chaff because some of these channels are really BS, you know.
Yeah.
They'll promote products and stuff like that, and they really won't be from, they'll be from people posing as scientists or whatever, but they're actually not.
And they might, be selling something, right?
They do, sometimes they do sell. They have their own vitamins and things like that. And some of them I find are not very good. But yeah, there are a good half dozen that I follow in particular that are really quite good.
Okay.
So I'm not going to make any recommendations here. Maybe in the footnotes you can add some later. I can compile
okay,
a list
yeah,
of ones
if
that
you
I
send
like
them to us, we
that
can
I like
them.
In particular. You know, again, just keep it simple. Don't eat anything that's processed or ultra processed, or at least keep that kind of content down to an absolute minimum. Don't succumb to peer pressure. Don't listen to what the medical community tells you. I mean, that latter is huge. I mean, I just lost all faith and trust in doctors.
Wow.
Yeah. Starting from 2005, when I presented myself to my NHS doctor, who was living in the UK at the time, and I had hypertension.
Okay, NHS,
I was over,
what is that?
National Health Service.
Okay,
in the
so
UK.
This was the socialized medical system.
Yeah, and they have the entry into that system is the local surgery. It's not where they operate on you. Surgery is just like a clinic. And you walk in there. It's like a, what we'd call a doc in a box or whatever. You know,
doc in the box.
So it's a little clinic with one or two or three or four doctors in there. And so I went in with hypertension. I had over 200, over 90 something. And they should have wheeled me into the hospital at that point. And the doctor just said to me, Hal, you know, yeah, I see you got some blood pressure issues. You just come back in a couple of weeks. We'll measure you again.
Oh, geez. Okay.
And at that point, I said, forget it. I'm not coming back. I'm not going to see you or anybody else in this quack institution. You know, you have no idea what you're talking about. And the solution was not medication. He should have put me on medication, actually. I needed it at that point. But instead, what I did was, that was my Damascene conversion moment, where I went over to this keto diet. You know, I just changed my lifestyle almost immediately because I was going to die.
Uh-huh. Oh, really? You thought you were going to die?
I thought I could have had a heart attack, coronary at any moment.
Oh, because of that high blood pressure.
The hypertension. In fact, my mother, who lived to 99, she died of dementia, but the reason she got dementia is because she had hypertension and she got mini strokes in her brain.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't want the same end that she had at a much earlier age. She started getting these in her mid to late 80s, and she lived to 99 with dementia. But I was only like, 45 or so. So yeah, no, I wasn't having it. 50 actually. So yeah, I wasn't going to go down that path.
Well, good
so
for you.
They're quacks. I mean, the doctors, I'm sorry to say, they're mostly pushing medications. They get a commission off of these. They get kickbacks from the pharma companies. And they have an inherent conflict of interest. They don't have your best interests at heart. And they treat you like you're on a conveyor belt with everybody else.
Well, that's true.
You get your 10 minutes in the office and you're out. And the only way to treat you is to prescribe something for your ailment without looking into any deeper cause whatsoever. They don't care.
I don't
they
like doctors don't who spend 2 minutes with you and then sit there with their hand on the doorknob.
Exactly.
Waiting to go. How can I get out
exactly.
of there?
So yeah.
I think there are good doctors that really are concerned and want to do good. It's hard to know. And the pharma, I go to church with a guy that sells big pharma. And one of the things that they do is they send young girls out to the doctors trying to hawk their wares.
Of course.
And try to kind of, you know, sweet talk them into buying their product. This was really true on, I think it was the TV series. No, it wasn't Pumped, but it was the one with, Dope Sick, I think it was. And they talked about the Purdue Pharma sending out these young ladies in order to, if you will, seduce the doctors into purchasing what they did.
Sure.
So it's all a sales game.
Sure.
And then lie to them.
Sure.
And then the doctors repeated that. This is according to the series, so it must be true. but the doctors would repeat that to their patients.
Yeah.
They would say that OxyContin doesn't bother you because it's a slow release and don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And then when it became addictive, the OxyContin people said, am I saying that right?
OxyContin.
When that happened, the marketer said, we need something new. We need a new phrase. And they said, we have the idea that when they get to the point where the OxyContin isn't working anymore, we say that they have breakthrough pain. And so all of the salesmen used to tell the doctors, well, it's breakthrough pain, and you just need to prescribe this higher dose of the
higher
pill.
Higher dose, yeah.
And it was just astonishing. I don't know how widespread that is across big pharma, but that was just chilling to me that these pharmaceutical companies would do that. And that certainly was the case of, I believe it was Purdue Pharma that was selling the OxyContin.
But this is pervasive throughout the pharmaceutical industry, this kind of behavior.
Uh-huh.
And the FDA is supposed to regulate and monitor this stuff, and obviously they failed in their primary duty.
Well, they were talking there about the history of approaching the FDA and getting it approved. Mm-hmm. They approached this one guy who was hesitant to do it, and finally they, I forget what the final line was, but he ended up, after he retired, going to work for Purdue Pharmacy, Pharmaceuticals, and getting big bucks.
Yeah.
It was kind of chilling. So
there was a heart medication in the early 2000s. I'm blanking on the name. It was from Pfizer, I think, and it was a heart medication. It had been approved by the FDA. They had falsified the test data. People were getting sick and dying during the testing phase, but they suppressed all that. They ascribed these deaths to other causes. And so they rolled it out. And in fact, I think 50,000 people or so died of complications from this particular heart medication until they figured out what was wrong and they pulled it off the market. But the penalty for, I think it was Pfizer, correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, but they suffered some penalty, but actually overall they made profit, so they didn't really care.
Yeah, it's all about the money.
You know, it's all about the money. Yeah. So the shareholders have to get their cut, and that's all that really matters. The managers have to get their bonuses. That's all that matters. Your actual health does not matter to them. And by the way, the United States is the only one of two countries in the world where advertising for pharmaceutical products on television is allowed.
Really?
Now the other is New Zealand.
You used to own a place in New Zealand,
right? I did, yeah.
And you live in Switzerland right now.
I live in Switzerland.
And you're familiar with what happens in Europe, and they're prohibited?
It's forbidden, of course.
Advertising?
Of course.
Pharmaceuticals?
Of course. It used to be that way in the States.
Okay.
And I think it was under Clinton. It was sometime in the 90s where they changed the rule. It's either Bush or Clinton, I forget which, but yeah, they changed the rules so that they could advertise on television.
Well, they do come on and they have big, happy people walking around and saying, oh, I took this and I feel better. And then they said, this can result in conditions such as hot dog fingers, bone liquefaction, you know, all of these terrible side effects.
Sure.
And all this time when you're hearing all these side effects, you still see these happy, smiling people kind of bouncing around. So they're selling it. That's for true.
Well, the other thing that people don't think about is that the television networks are making huge amounts of money from the advertising from pharmaceutical products.
I never thought about that.
Of course. So do you think they're going to be critical and write and put expose programs on about pharmaceutical abuse and what the pharmaceutical... No, of course not. So they're all buddy-buddy with the pharmaceutical companies because they're getting paid by them.
Yeah.
So it's a huge conflict of interest across media. It's quite a scandal, actually, and I hope that RFK Jr. puts a stop to the advertising thing.
Well, thank you, Hal. This has been a great conversation. We've been talking about Hal Philip, about some of his thoughts and opinions, and you should check this out, right? We, you know, check it out, get all sides, and then make your own decision of what is right.
Everybody should make their own decision. Everybody should be empowered to make their own decision.
Yep.
And feel a responsibility for their family, their loved ones, for themselves.
Exactly.
To decide.
Now, Hal is better known, and we've had a podcast on this, as the inventor of the automatic faucet, the automatic door opener, and really a big one, the automatic touchscreen that everybody uses every day. But since he sold his company, he has decided to change his focus and his goal on longevity. He wants to be around to play with his grandkids, right?
Exactly.
And in order to do that, you got to take care of yourself, keep yourself mentally alert, physically fit. That has to do with exercise, nutrition, and all of these other things. And it turns out he's not the only one in this field. You're not a voice in the wilderness. There's lots of people that agree with you. And I would think of Jordan Peterson, for example, as another one.
Sure. And Brian Johnson in California is another one.
Brian Johnson.
Brian Johnson is a guy who's striving to be half of his biological age.
Oh, he's a guy that's going for immortality.
Yeah,
right?
He's basically going for immortality. Yeah. He's regressing in age. Yeah.
Well, good luck to that.
Yeah, good luck with that, yeah.
But I tell you.
He's spending a lot of money on it.
I'll end it with a disclaimer, a claim that I've known about immortality for a long time.
You have, haven't you? Okay.
Thank you, Hal Philip.
God bless.
This has been a great conversation with Hal Philip. And so next time on Mind Matters News, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.